Welcome to the Promises of the Constitution podcast.
Hello, this is Pamela Romney Openshaw here with podcast number 24 to talk to you today about those who contributed to America's freedom, those who helped us write our Constitution and provided us the ideas. So we ask ourselves, where did the ideas that our Constitution was based on come from? And when we look at those, we can find many different sources of where our information came from. We normally attribute Europe as the source of our ideas, with Montesquieu and Blackstone and Locke and such as those. But our ideas, actually, the ideas of representative government, represented by the people, with the people governing themselves, have been present in many different societies. Our ideas for where America came from begin with ancient Israel under the law of Moses, where Moses was shown principles by God and then implemented among a people, and they had a representative government, and they had a system of judges, and they had an executive with a legislative branch, a lot of things that duplicate what we have today. The ancient Anglo-Saxons coming into the area of Great Britain just a couple of hundred years after the birth of Jesus Christ also brought a system of representative government with them. The Mormons in the Book of Mormon, the church being called the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, in the Book of Mormon you read about a representative system of government that was given to the people in the Americas. And then we trace that further and go to the American Indians, and in fact Indians all around the world, the people that we normally call the Indians, have had systems of representative government given to them all over the world. And interestingly enough, virtually all of these sources attribute their beliefs back to a belief in Jesus Christ, a belief in God, a Christian belief. So let's talk a little bit about the American Indians, because that's the great source that I want to make available to you today. So we have, of course, these European sources for our ideas, but we also have an equally compelling force bringing information into our Constitution from a group known as the Iroquois, a nation of five tribes, later on became six tribes, in the eastern part of the United States, actually in the state of New York. The five tribes, and then adding a sixth one, were the Onondaga, the Mohawk, the Seneca, the Cayuga, and the Oneida. And later on in the early 1700s, they entered the Tuscarora tribe. And this group of six tribes developed what we would call very much a constitution that they operated by. And this system that they developed influenced our founding fathers. It began, first of all, with Benjamin Franklin, who was introduced to the ideas of the Iroquois Confederacy as early as 1744, which was 30 years before we began talking about it among the colonies. In fact, in the year 1754, Benjamin Franklin tried to help the colonies develop a unified system of government. It was called the Albany Plan. It failed. One of the things that he was encouraging was a system of unity that would draw them all together. And he got this concept of unity among the tribes from the Native American Indians. But we have other founding fathers that were also influenced by the ideas of the Iroquois because of this great Republican Confederacy that they developed. We have Thomas Jefferson. We have James Madison, the father of the Constitution. We have James Wilson, who was another one of the great founders for the Constitution. We know that James Madison took Lafayette with him and went to live among the Native American Indians for a week so they could come to understand their ideas better. And we have Iroquois chiefs coming and speaking to the Second Continental Congress in the year 1776, just before the Constitution was written. So we have all of these great influences coming from the American Indians. The document that they composed was a functioning, written political instrument. It was known to them as the Great Law of Peace. And it was a written document, but it wasn't written the way we write because they weren't writing it on paper. What they did instead was they put it into a written form in what they call a wampum belt, which is beads strung into a specific pattern and mounted to be a permanent entity. And this Great Law of Peace on the wampum belt, called the Great Law of Peace, designated what their law of government was. You had to learn how to read the wampum the same way we have to learn to read languages. It's interesting that, as I said earlier, that when this law came, and the law came to the Iroquois, it came through an individual that they designated as a prophet who came to them and said, "This is a system given to us by God." And so they took this system given to them by God and added a lot of symbolism to it as it changed a little bit throughout the years, and things that they didn't completely understand, they brought some symbolism in, and that symbolism gets to be kind of weird to us as Americans. But again, you have this great document. It was actually a theocratic form of government, one that was based on the will of God, because the leaders in the Iroquois Confederacy carried with them the name that said that they were to remind the people of the Creator, and they were designated to be spiritual guides to the people as well as to be civil guides for the people. So what then were the similarities that the Native American Indians had to our Constitution of the United States? Well, there were very many. One of the core concepts was that law came from the consent of the governed. And so a council of individuals that had been selected by the people would come together and meet. They would draft the laws, and then they would go back to the people asking the people to ratify those laws. So this was a key concept. The people either ratified it or the law didn't hold. There was also a bottoms-up principle operating in the Iroquois Confederacy. The people could suggest changes that they wanted made, and then the leaders were expected to carry those out. But all of their business was done in these great councils. What are some of the other similarities? Well, if a leader did not carry forth with the things that he was instructed to do, he could be impeached. And if he was impeached, it was a very serious mark against him. In fact, if you read the Iroquois Great Law of Peace, and I have done that, it's very fascinating. You see so many parallels between our Constitution and the Iroquois Great Law of Peace. In fact, I have one book that lists, on the left side of the page, it lists the principles of the United States Constitution going through the entire document. And then on the right-hand column, it lists the principles of the Iroquois Great Law of Peace. And they match in so many places all the way through. So we have an impeachment process. They had an impeachment process. And as I said, it was a real negative to be impeached, and written right into their document, their written constitutional document, is the statement that the Creator will not rescue you because He has nothing to do with wrong. Many references to God, to the Creator, all the way through this document. I picked out probably 6 or 8 references to God written into that document. The Iroquois people had rights that were designated to be theirs. This is a characteristic of all Christian government. The characteristics, the rights that they had, were things like when they had a grievance, they had the right to go before a council, and all individuals going before the council would be treated equally. They had the freedom to come and go as they choose to do, to use the resources of the earth as they needed to do that. They had religious freedom. They were not compelled to any specific religion. And there were others, of course. I'm just quoting some of them to you. What about the duties that they had connected to those rights? Well, they had the responsibility to care for the earth, because all of their resources, all of their benefit, all of their help came from the earth. So they had this responsibility to care for the earth. They had the responsibility to support the government, to support the Confederacy, the Iroquois Confederacy. They had the responsibility to be grateful for the things that they were given and express that gratitude to the Creator. And they were required to be compassionate to others, for those who had done without, and to share their goods with them. They also had a system of checks and balances built into their system of government. And here's where the entire Iroquois Confederacy starts to become very interesting, because under this system of government, the women were considered to be absolutely equal with the men. And so in their checks and balances system, the women selected the representatives to go to the governing council. The women's council selected them. So they would always select men. The men would go to the governing council, and then once the laws were passed, they would bring those laws back specifically to the women's council in accordance with the other councils as well, and the women would have to accept those principles. So this balance between the women and the men helped to restrain power. And of course, they had other ways they did that as well. A little bit more about this concept of women and their equality, because the women had so much power in their roles. They selected the chiefs. They were the ones who initiated the impeachment process. And in the Iroquois Confederacy, in that entire quorum of countries, of tribes that met together, it was a matriarchal society. So when a man got married to a woman, he joined the woman's family instead of the way we've always done it in our Western society, where the woman joins the man's society. The land was invested with the women. So many of the rights and the powers initiated with the women. Well, some of the other things that we can bring in, we mentioned the concept of justice and the fact that they had the process of impeachment. They also had a process of treason, where an individual could be tried for treason. And they had great equality in their grievances. Anyone that was injured was always treated equally with anyone else. The concept of unity, their phrase that they used was unity or die. And their belief was, as written into their constitution, that the tribes of the Iroquois Confederacy were enfolded, that they were the same in their heads, their bodies, and their minds. They operated together. They had the concept of the tied arrows that we see in our United States seal, our official seal, the tied arrows together. That came from the Iroquois Confederacy. They had, in addition to their wampums, belts, which designated their documents, they also had strings of shells. They used shells to communicate and convey their information, as we would use pens, or in the early days, sharpened feathers, or whatever they were doing. But their public opinion had to be unanimous. Anytime they reached a decision that carried through their entire culture, it had to be agreed upon unanimously. There was a great principle of integrity that functioned among the Indians as well. Their leaders were expected to represent the Creator. They acted as spiritual guides to the people. Their leaders were to be the very best individuals that they could find, and they were to watch them very carefully. Sounds very, very much like how we select leaders and ratify them through the voting process, and then we are supposed to watch them carefully to be sure that they are doing what we ask them to do. There are some differences in how the governments functioned, our government as opposed to theirs. They did not see property as a personal possession kind of thing. Property was regarded as a community thing so that all could use it. Almost a consecrated form of thing rather than a personal possession. I want to accumulate more, and I'm more important than you are because I have more stuff than you have. So those are just some of the similarities. The Indian tribes, through the years, as they became assimilated with the Americans, began to drop many of their policies, which is one of the great sadnesses for us. But I find it to be very significant that they occupied the territory that we occupied in the United States of America as we began to form the Constitution of the United States. So these individuals were sitting there right in upstate New York, the upper part of New York, ready to give these principles forward and use them to help bless the American people. So there are many things about the Indians that we don't understand. There's some conflicting things. We saw great barbarity from the Indians during the French and Indian War and moving into the Revolutionary War, but we need to understand that the French were driving a lot of those processes because they were using the Indians to try and defeat the British. There have been many changes among the Indian people, just as there have been changes among us, but we need to go back and take a look at them, what they were at that period in time when this great and beautiful system of prosperity, the great law of peace, operated among the Native American Indians. So thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you have enjoyed this information. You can certainly go online and find some more information. We'll see you again next week. Bye.
To have Pamela speak to your civic or church group, please call 801-373-0240 or email openshawenterprises@gmail.com. Thank you for listening to the Promises of the Constitution podcast. Be sure to go to Pam's website, promisesoftheconstitution.com, to purchase her books, DVDs, and her online educational courses available to watch on any electronic device.